Please mind the gap between the train and the platform.
This is Barbican Station. Hello and welcome back to Barbican Station, and here we are. We've made it through all the way to episode 8 of Down Cemetery Road. I am pleased to welcome back Keir Graff, host of the Filmographers Podcast, to break down all of the stuff that we see in this episode, wrap things up. And Keir, thank you for coming back. Thank you for this journey we've been on this season.
We have been there and back again, like people taking a boat to an island and returning to a small Scottish village.
Yes. Well, and I have to ask you, I have been taking public transit all my life, and there is probably nothing more dispiriting and fury-inducing than seeing your bus kind of tool by without stopping. I don't know, has that ever happened to you before? Because it's happened to me multiple times, and it's like literally the brain-exploding emoji. So I can only imagine those extras.
I have been there. I have been there on a sleety, cold, miserable day in February in Chicago, banging on the side of the bus as the bus driver rolls by pretending not to see me. It's gotten better in recent years, but there were a decade or two of my Chicago experience where it was not that uncommon to have a bus driver blow past the stop.
Yes, yeah. So I could fully relate to that those folks in this episode. I did appreciate that.
It was nail-biting tension.
All right. Well, so let's kind of jump overall before we get into maybe some of the more nitty-gritty. What did you think of this episode? This is our finale. This is the end of the episode. We left things off with everybody kind of getting off the island. Here we all are back on mainland. And what did you think about how this all kind of wraps up?
Yeah, I have kind of mixed feelings about it. I like the series as a whole, and I thought some of the individual episodes were excellent. We talked at the beginning of the season, you know, wondering whether this would really hold up to an 8-episode arc. And I think we may have gotten our answer here in that the final 2 episodes, it really felt like a 2-part denouement. And it seemed a little padded at times, a little unfocused. And part of it comes down to the structure of the book. But we have this intense, pretty great island sequence in episode 7. But then it just sort of feels like, you know, if you were writing a story independently of the book, I think you would script that as the whiz-bang ending. Instead, we have all the main characters coming back to the mainland, unscathed, more or less, after this kind of harrowing ending to the previous episode. And then it's just sort of like we pick up again. And so it really felt like kind of I know it's very popular in a lot of thrillers to have kind of 2 endings, essentially. You have the ending that feels like the real ending and then another ending. This wasn't that, but it still did feel like two end episodes, and neither of them were entirely satisfying.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with you on that. I'd maybe even be probably a little more harsher. And maybe I would have felt less irritated if they had released both of them at the same time and, you know, okay, I'm watching this one and then the next one, kind of like they did with the first two, right? But this was just, there was a lot of long wrap-ups here at the end, and I feel like we did not need. And, you know, when we talk about some more specific stuff, we can get into it. But it just felt like putting a hat on a hat at the end there quite a couple of times. You know, we were wearing, it was like caps for sale.
You're
walking around with a lot of hats on it by the end time we get to the end of this episode.
That's a great analogy. And a deep cut in the children's book world. I was searching for the title myself while you were talking. We'll talk about the ending more for sure. But yeah, I watch a lot of old movies. And one of the things I love about old movies, particularly for the 1940s, is when the movie's over, it's over. There aren't 7 codas. And I think this series would have benefited from a 1940s style ending.
Yeah, agreed. So, you know, the thing that we see here that I got to ask you, you know, I kind of, last episode, I was like, wow, what a cliffhanger. Zoe is dead at the end of this episode. Shocker. Who would have thought they'd kill Emma Thompson in the second to last episode? And spoiler alert, nobody, because she's, you know, alive within 10 seconds of the episode starting there.
I didn't think for a moment she was dead. I did think the CGI of the landmines, maybe, I don't know, maybe my internet was laggy or something, but I thought that the CGI for the explosions on the beach was a little shady, but I knew when we didn't see her that we would see her again. I was surprised at how quickly she returned. That was one of the things that I think started this episode off on a little bit of a false note. Yes, it was funny to have Sarah talking to Dinah about the cross lady. I did enjoy that. And then it was a funny moment to have the cross lady suddenly appear and having overheard this, but it also just was not believable. I was kind of puzzled, you know, given that Sarah has taken the raft out off the island with Dinah, but we saw at the end of the previous episode that the fisherman was still around. I kind of almost thought she would take the raft to his fishing boat and clamber aboard. It just seemed like all of a sudden everybody has a boat. You know, you get a boat and you get a boat and you get a boat. And even the boat that, you know, Amos got, like just conveniently waiting, this little crummy boat that hardly looks seaworthy, he just hops into it so he can get back to the island. So there weren't enough difficulties introduced. It was just kind of like, well, we had this huge life or death situation, and then everybody could just kind of motor back to the mainland.
Yeah, it was a musical boats, because, you know, you got Amos on Downey's boat, and then Sarah's on Amos's boat, you know, so, you know, we're just going to shuffle things around.
Yeah, we're just going to change boats. And Sarah has no problem dragging that huge rubber raft off the beach by herself. I don't know. I imagine those things weigh an awful lot.
Well, I was more worried about her navigating back to the mainland after she couldn't find the island the first time. So
also an excellent point. She doesn't have a compass this time or a crabby Scottish sea captain.
Yeah. The one thing that was funny was Sarah has no clue how to interact with children. It's pretty obvious after the opening. I did kind of like that. She's just like trying to be, you know, kind of consoling, and then she just kind of goes off the rails and starts talking about how really mean Zoe was.
Yeah, yeah. Those monologues are great, and she delivers them so well. I did enjoy the shoplifting scene. I thought there was just a very nice moment of unspoken acting where Dinah holds up the stuffed animal because, you know, she needs to replace the one that was left behind. And there's just this look passes between them, and the way Sarah kind of gives her permission with a glance is so great. And then instantly is like, I know this is she recognizes that this is a bad lesson to be teaching. Despite the circumstances, she tries to give her the little moral lesson. So I did enjoy that.
Well, and for a small town, man, that corner store sees a lot of theft, right? You know, two episodes before you had the teenage hooligans breaking in. Now Sarah's going in there to steal. They need a security system.
Well, if we can believe what we saw and read in Trainspotting decades ago, Scotland is just a den of thieves and villainy.
Let's talk about Malik. What's the matter with Malik? Because I feel like a lot of maybe some of the problems with this episode stem from him and his storyline, right? Because I think he kind of takes a little bit of center stage with his moral problems, right? You know, what is he going to do? Is he going to kill them? Is he not going to kill them? And that functions as the crux of like the instigating action for a lot of the things that happen in this episode, whether it's him stealing the bus, whether it's him, you know, waving a gun around in the church, then this whole sequence at the end with Sarah. And it's all about, is he going to kill somebody or is he not?
Right.
And how did you buy that kind of progression that we ended up seeing in this episode?
Dramatically, characters who are indecisive can be a tough watch. And I think that if it were a matter of him wanting to fulfill the mission, but being too afraid or having moral qualms about it, and if that were clear, that might have been stronger drama. It just kind of feels like he's just doesn't know what he wants to do and he's chicken. Like, I mean, I think that I'm glad to have a character who doesn't want to kill a child, you know, but at the same time, it just felt like his character in this episode functions only as a stalling device. And one of the problems with this episode was stalling on multiple fronts. When we get to the end of the episode, we can talk about that some more. But I've been frustrated with his character throughout. As you know, I think I'm a broken record. I say this every time we recap an episode. Great actor, fairly funny character, It's almost too much of him without giving him any development. You know, he doesn't have an arc. You know, he begins the series as, or he ends the series as he began it, which is somebody who is easily cowed, unable to act, and, you know, too squeamish for the job he's been given, which in small doses is funny or useful, but it just goes on and on and on. I grew very tired of his character during this episode.
Especially when I think the thing that was well, first, I'm going to give him all props, at least at the start. Very good bus driver. I can't imagine he's driven a lot of buses. Pretty good at the start. I went off the rails at the end, but, you know, hey, I give him credit for that at least.
Yeah, he made it down the road for a few miles, it looks like. Yeah.
Better than I would have done. But, you know, the big thing is he doesn't want to kill anybody. And then at the very end, the reversal is he actually does try to kill Sarah because he pulls the trigger on this very poorly telegraphed, plugged shotgun or old-timey revolver, right? And blows his whole arm off. And that just didn't make sense that he would switch it up at that point. I mean, he had Amos like at gunpoint at the forehead, right? And if anybody you would want to shoot, you'd think it would be him, especially after he says he wants to kill you. So it was just a head scratcher for me, and I couldn't square that circle.
100%. Yeah. And since we're talking about the ending, I'm just going to plunge into it. I think that whole thing just doesn't work. First of all, in the book, the old gun with the plugs and the barrels works very nicely. It's a nice device in the book. And in the book, it's Amos wielding that, and that's how we get rid of Amos. Now, one of the changes between the book and the series, as best I can remember, because I don't remember a Malick character, that you've set up two bad guys, so one for each female lead for the end, which, okay, that's a decent change for the series, I guess. But the setup of the plugs in the barrels is so many episodes behind that Sarah has to remind us of what Gerard says to her about that gun. So she has to say the line, which is clunky. We should know and we should remember it. But also, she's aiming that gun in his face. You can see the plugs in the barrels. Even somebody as oblivious as Malick, I think, would see that there's some brightly colored plastic plugs in the barrel and would say, oh, that's, you know, that's not a functional weapon. It really drove me crazy at the ending because both Amos and Malick did the classic James Bond villain thing where it's like, I'm going to talk long enough or I'm going to toy with you long enough that you're going to get a chance to actually come back and kill me. Amos does it in the church by saying, I think he's like, might as well have fun while I still can, which was a pretty lame line. And, you know, giving Zoe time to spike him in the eyeball. And Malick is just, okay, we get that he's indecisive and that's fine, but the thing that just makes zero sense is he throws the gun away. He would only throw his gun away, I think, if he recognizes that the gun that's being aimed at him is non-functional and is not actually a threat. But instead, he's playing that game to win her trust to then get a non-functional gun. None of it makes sense, and his decision to pull the trigger there, as you say, makes zero sense when I thought it was preposterous that he would not have shot Amos when he had the chance. He knows how dangerous Amos is. Amos says, I'm going to kill you, and he doesn't do it. And then when they hear Dinah outside the church, they both abandon their feud. I mean, I don't know. I honestly, you know, and Amos just kind of looks distracted and lets Malick run off. Amos, true to his personality, would have killed Malick right then and there, taken care of business, and then gone after the girl.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of weird choices there that I don't quite understand. You know, I mean, if we're going to talk about Amos and what happens with him as well, I thought after building up this character who is just such a force, right? I mean, you know, the actor has done such a tremendous job of creating this really interesting villain.
Yes.
What they do, I mean, it was the, I mean, I kind of the most typical, you've seen it a zillion times kind of out, right? You know, oh, I found this weapon, I'm going to pull it out and get the guy when he gets me. I've seen it before. And then insult to injury, he just like falls down and hits his head and is dead. I mean, it was just such a waste of when they've spent so long building him up as such a great character to have that go out and not let Zoe use her brain, which we see, you know, all the time. She's a smart character. Not figuring out a way to give her some sort of clever way to outwit him and kill him was really frustrating for me as a viewer, for both of those characters.
That's an excellent point. And talk about a hat on a hat, the stumble and braining himself moment, like that really bothered me as well, because first of all, long spike through the eyeball, I think that reaches the brain. I think he's dead there. But also, no knock on a mature actress, but he's a lethal killing machine. Zoe takes so much physical abuse. It just kind of, it doesn't work that she is tussling with him so long and she's not holding her own, but you know, like honestly, he could break her in two. He could break me in two like a twig. And I agree completely. Like, her greatest attribute is her quick-wittedness, her intellect, her ability to see two steps ahead, her knowledge of the angles, and her, you know, her bravery. And that doesn't come into play. She just, she has a spike. She catches him in the eyeball, and then he does this pratfall. It just, it could have been so much better.
We talked about this maybe once before. I brought it up last episode. These shows have done suspense and tension very well. The action portion, less so, I think. And I think that's a problem that we see in this episode as well, right? I mean, where you've got this scene between Malik and Amos, and they're hiding underneath them, and, you know, total Star Wars moment here. You know, it's like we're in the Millennium Falcon of churches. But like that, you know, you feel the tension there, and it's really good. It's when they get into the action portion that I feel like it kind of falls down, and they don't quite know how to stage it in a way that feels... You want action to feel kind of fulfilling. You want it to kind of hit those story beats that you want. And I don't feel like they've succeeded here.
Yes. And the previous episode, there was pretty good tension there, I would say. I think that that episode also suffered from a kind of a diffuseness because there's this huge landscape and so many characters coming and going from distances away. But there was a real sense of being trapped in this old facility and seeing Amos come in and then seeing the cameras go out and stuff like that. I agree. I think it's so much better when they work on the suspense angles. And maybe that was just a problem of execution because they don't have the experience, you know, doing the full-on action sequences. Like the sniping scene while Zoe's running across the beach. I don't know. I just didn't like it as much. I really like the claustrophobia that's induced by knowing this killing machine is coming after them. And Downey has, you know, three bullets in his gun or whatever it is. And Amos has this massive assault weapon, like that kind of feeling of like mismatched resources. That stuff's all really effective. And then when they just bring it into like open conflict, it just kind of fell down, and partly because these are such verbal characters. So there's a lot less chance for them to showcase their verbal chops or their intellectual chops when it just comes to a fight.
Now, I will say I did really enjoy the ending when they finally have succeeded. They're dead. They're on their way out. They hop in the car, which, okay, we got to take a one step back here because Amos steals this car. Headcanon, that's Gerard's car, right? I mean... He finds this hat and this Town and Country magazine in there.
Modern Squire.
Yes. Gerard was visiting that town in Scotland and he just stole his car, right?
Yeah, I got a very good laugh at that car and the magazine and the hat and just Amos's kind of little snort at the title of the magazine.
Yeah. But you know, so Zoe and Sarah and Dinah hop in the car. They drive off. There's this really fun moment with the radio and Zoe and Sarah with their differing viewpoints kind of like messing with the song. Sarah throws her ring out, you know, and then they drive off into the sunset and that's the end of the show. And I thought that really worked.
Yeah. And when the credits came up, I was like, perfect ending. Oh, wait. No, they didn't. They kept on going. No, but I agreed. I enjoyed that scene. I thought they were leaning a little hard into the comedy, but you know, it was earned. They've been through a hell of a lot. Sarah belting out "What's Going On" was quite funny. They dragged it on long enough, I think, to make it kind of more funny, probably. And then when Zoe changes the station and as the Clash, "Know Your Rights" seemed like the right kind of song for her and a good thematic song for the show. The Clash being a good choice there. We've talked a lot about their choice of songs sometimes being a little on the nose, but I thought those very nicely contrasted.
Yeah, no, I do. I've really enjoyed the song choices this season. And so for that one, too, I think that was great. But unfortunately, you know, for me, the show keeps going for like another 20 minutes or so here. And again, you know, we're talking hats on hats. This was just, there was a lot of that here. And we end up spending a long time with C and Talia. That I was really scratching my head over why we were hanging out with these characters. I mean, I liked the moment that there's a short moment there that I liked where he's going to take the fall for all of this, you know, because that's his role, because that's what you do, right? You know, you've pin it on somebody. But beyond that, I just, you know, did we need to see her on the Newsnight show? And I don't think so.
I was a little torn on the fate of C because we had seen him getting very genuinely nervous about what would happen if his role and if this whole scandal comes out. And then he tells Talia that, no, I was just, you know, giving you plausible deniability, but you blew it, basically. And then he resigns with absolute equanimity, which made it seem puzzling to me that he had looked so genuinely fearful just moments before. And then it was just like, oh, it's no big deal. Well, it's got out, but I'll just leave government. So that didn't quite gel for me. I did think the moment of him stepping out into a fancy car, signing a contract, which is kind of hilarious to sign it in pen in the car. Come on, it would be a DocuSign. We all know that. But like taking his job, you know, welcome to the private sector, you know, that's appropriate because certainly we know from real life, that's what happens to people when they screw up in government. They go make 10 times more in the private sector. And generally speaking, they're probably better off because they get to do what they do without scrutiny. So that seemed like an appropriate end for his character. But then I just thought, well, why did he seem so terrified all along? And it was interesting to see Talia then take on his worries. And she has been so full of bluster, like, well, we're going to do everything the right way. And now it's in her lap. She's shredding documents frantically. But yes, I also agree. I just didn't think we need it. I think that you construct this story in a way that allows you to end it with our trio of heroes driving off and then roll credits. What did you think about that moment where Talia finishes her TV interview? She steps out in a darkened hallway and she turns the wrong way. And then her assistant says, no, actually, the car's this way. And Talia stares into the darkened tunnel for a moment. It felt almost like, in the end, I think it was just she was looking a little lost, like she was just staring into the abyss is what they were trying to illustrate. But for a half a second, I thought, like, wait a minute, is there a threat to her waiting down that darkened hallway? Because, you know, now they're going to eliminate her. It just felt like a kind of weird moment.
You're going to get my heart fluttering that Amos is going to come out of the shadows there. Bring him back.
Maybe there's a they were triplets, Amos and Axel and Alex.
Harry.
Gary.
That was a little bit of an interesting moment. You know, I think overall, I did kind of like the arc for her of this, you know, she comes in as this new broom, right? Sweeping all the baddies away and ends up turning into just another, getting to see like how the sausage is made and realizing that there's a little bit more to this than just, you know, scented candles and new furniture. But again, like you say, I wish that that beat needed to happen in earlier in the episode or move it somehow, because I don't need to spend 4 or 5 minutes with her and C right at the very end of this show. When, I mean, yes, is it interesting to see how that shakes out? Sure. Do I care about those people? No.
Agreed, 100%. Like, we should have an inkling of their fates before we end the show with the people we are invested in. No question. I did think Tully had a hilarious line to see. She says, don't treat me like an idiot just because I like a smelly candle. And then he later says, those shredded documents could be taped together. You should burn them maybe with one of your smelly candles. So they got their mileage out of the candles.
Yeah. So that was a little frustrating. We also end up right on the train. There's like they have this whole additional moment of kind of bonding between Zoe and Sarah on the train again, which I feel is, you know, still kind of playing on some of those similar beats that we got in the car, frankly, without any dialogue. You know, they're just singing and you kind of get the same idea without saying it overtly, right? Which I thought, again, it's playing some of these beats a little too long.
They really repeat it 3 times because in the car, Zoe changes the radio and Sarah's kind of trying to like bond with her there. And Zoe changes the radio, which is a very Zoe thing to do. And that all plays very nicely. And then in the train, Sarah is again trying to bond with her and only manages to kind of like get the moment she's looking for when she brings out some little airline bottles of booze. And then the third time at the train station, when Sarah wants to say goodbye to Zoe, Zoe's already walking off and kind of waves over her shoulder. So it's really 3 moments. And again, economy of storytelling, pick the best one.
Yeah. Overall, with this, what I would have liked more is give me like an hour and a half finale episode, smoosh these last 2 episodes together a bit more, you know, cut some of this stuff at the very end and just make it a little more snappy. You know, I think I really liked the stuff on the island. I thought that all was really strong. There was some wonderful visuals, you know, the location scouting they did for that episode in particular was really strong. It felt like they were kind of trying to pad things out in a way that was just a bit of a head scratcher and it just needed a little bit more, you know, sharp penciling.
You are 100% correct. Yeah. 1.5 times length a 90-minute finale would have been the way to go.
Well, you know, so one of the fun things, though, that you do see right at the very end, by I think it's right around the 3 minute to go mark when they cut to the train station, is you see Mick Herron and his partner walking through the background right behind Zoe and Sarah, which was kind of fun for those in the know. So I did like that.
Ah, I'm going to have to go back and freeze frame. That's great.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know. I'm sounding a lot more down on this maybe than I need to, but mainly just because I was a little disappointed in the way some of the character arcs kind of played out. I mean, I think at the very end, Sarah is just still kind of adrift, even more so than we see her, you know, in the car. At least you feel like she's made a decision, right? She's thrown her wedding ring away. She doesn't know where she's going, but she has at least made some sort of decision.
Yeah.
And in the train station, we leave her and she's just kind of adrift there. I mean, as your final shot, it was a bit of a head scratcher.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And unsatisfying. I mean, if you're trying to set it up for a future season, then I don't mind a brief moment with each character after they part. You know, maybe Zoe, off the top of my head, like maybe she's back at Joe's office and she's razoring off the paint and she's getting her own name painted on or something to you know, indicate that she's going to carry on, or maybe she's saying farewell to Joe or something. I mean, I would almost, this is not really the note I want to end on, but like, if you're going to give us a little bit more, then maybe you see Sarah confronting her husband or moving out, or we see some sense that she's ended up in a stronger place. I mean, she's gone on this amazing journey. And it was interesting too, because, you know, I think that they really set her up, like her interest in this child is maybe that she wants to be a mother herself. But, you know, the last thing she says about it is like, for two women who don't want kids, I think we did a pretty good job. And she seems very sincere in saying that. It would have been interesting if that could have been portrayed against a note of yearning. Like maybe she really does want to become a mother, but she's also discovered that her husband is completely unfit material for parenting. And so where does that leave her? But it still suggests a future arc or something. Yeah. Yeah. It seemed really kind of unfair to her character, and yeah, and sort of unsatisfying for both, because they just kind of wander off having done this. But again, I would have been fine with them just driving down the road. Give us the emotional uplift. We'll be seeing these women again. It just kind of ended in a strange place.
Yeah, it was a lot of head-scratching choices here in the finale of this one. So, I don't know.
But as you say, I also don't want it to taint my, you know, we tend to remember the final scene or the final episode tends to take outsized importance, I think, in our minds. I do think it was a good series, like a very good series. I enjoyed it throughout. I may have had individual quibbles here and there, but I found it very watchable, very enjoyable. Loved the performances. And I thought, generally speaking, the writing was quite good, which is perhaps why, you know, some missteps in the final episode stand out so much more.
Yeah, I'd agree. You know, I think moment to moment, it's a strong show, right? I think if I was picking out individual scenes from this episode, I think I'd be fine with all of them. And the writing is very sharp. It's very fun to watch. These actors are very good. I think it's when you string it all together, especially it's like some of these things that they've been kind of doing throughout have kind of come rolling to a stop in this final episode. And that's, I think, what made it a little less satisfying for me as a finale than maybe some other shows.
Yeah. Well, and you think about some other stuff too, like they set up a lot of Sarah's kind of past trauma and she was the girl that flew off the roof and her ambivalence about child rearing and her kind of frustrations in her marriage and her job and stuff. And they gave her the sense of purpose in this girl, and she goes to the ends of earth for that girl. And Zoe notes that Sarah's a lot like Joe, which is a cool thing to learn about her. But then they just leave her completely like adrift, like she's in a raft in the middle of the ocean. So they just could have done more with the whole arc of it. But yeah, individually, from episode to episode, scene to scene, you know, I mean, I would recommend to people that they check it out.
Oh, for sure. I mean, hey, we got Chekhov's grenade, which I was glad.
He did get to the church awfully quickly. It felt like, you know, it felt like he was on the side of the road somewhere. And then all of a sudden that grenade comes flying through the window. But we did need that for the pacing.
I mean, and again, like visually, I think this show was beautiful to look at. Great locations and you know, the scene in the church with it burning to the ground, you know, all of that stuff was suitably epic feel to it, which, you know, I appreciate. You want the ending to have a little bit of heft there. And I feel like they got that from the cinematography.
Oh, yeah. So much ending. So much heft.
What would you call out as the best part of this season here? I want to end on some exciting, fun stuff. So what would you say is the thing, you know, in your mind, like the best part of this show for you and the thing that would say, this is why you want to watch this?
Well, honestly, and I don't mean to damn the later episodes with faint praise, but some of my favorite stuff came early on with the character development. You know, I thought the character of Joe was just wonderfully portrayed and such a charming, fascinating guy, so that when he died, it gave you real emotional weight, which then was a spur for Sarah and Zoe, and he's remembered throughout the show, and so that provides a lot of the gravitas or the weight of the show. I thought that, you know, the Gerard stuff and some of the, like, you know, the dinner party sequence, I mean, some of the just like what you think of as kind of British drama style acting, you know, was just great, meaty dialogue, excellent actors. And so that definitely hooked me in the early episodes. But I will say too, that when we talk about some of the suspense stuff they pulled off that wasn't out and out action, we talked about the train episode in the middle of the series. That is excellent. It was just so good, excruciating tension, but also some funny moments and some good acting chops in there as well. So I think for the most part, they balanced meaty acting with some very solid tension and suspense. What about you?
For me, I would say that it was the creation of some really interesting, unique villains. We have Rufus / Axel in those first couple episodes with just a great heel turn. I mean, that made that whole first two episodes, I think, is seeing how that played out. And then the slow layering of different interesting things with Amos, as you know, he drops these accents. We see his apartment where he's got the treadmill, walking treadmill there, and then he's sitting in the bath all the time. He's watching Keeping Up Appearances on the telly and just, you know, having a great old time. I mean, I thought all of that stuff made him somebody that was not your stock villain. And I really appreciated that. And that was what kept me kind of coming back and wanting to see, what are they going to do with this guy next? You know, he's crying at the graveside of his brother who he just chopped into little pieces. You know, I mean, all of that stuff, really good stuff.
He's such a great character and such an amazing performance by Fainty Balogun. It's all the more reason it was frustrating that his ending just didn't resonate, just didn't feel worthy of him. Because you're right, he's a terrific villain and so nuanced. And I was always interested to see him when he came on screen. I mean, he could do that kind of dead mask, dead faced kind of like psycho killer thing. But then he had these nuanced moments where he's doing this silly voice on the phone, and he contained multitudes, and then he slipped and brained himself.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, if folks are interested, I'll make sure to drop links in the show notes. But the actor actually has done a couple of TED Talks. He's been kind of instrumental in founding some climate change organizations and focused on helping television and film productions in the UK be greener. Really good stuff. Really interesting. He's obviously knows how to tell a story. So that was a fun couple watches.
He's a TV villain and a real life hero. I like that.
There you go. Unlike Slow Horses, which I think is one of its strengths, where you get a trailer for the next season at the end, right? Which just, you know, so few TV shows now, you just are kind of left in limbo. Are we going to see this again? Is it gone forever? What's happening here? Slow Horses is bucks that trend a little bit. We don't get that with this because they haven't, I think they're waiting to see how this season is, whether folks, you know, are into this show or not. What would you want to see in next season? I've read the books, but I have a feeling that they could kind of go off of them even more so based on having read them. So, I mean, do you see a second season coming? Would you want to see a second season? And what would you want to see in that second season?
Before I answer, I'm curious. So I've only read the first one, which we discussed. And does Sarah return as a character in the later ones? Or I had this impression that it becomes Zoe's show.
The next one, definitely Sarah does make an appearance, although it's more, yes, it's more of a Zoe kind of focus thing. And then there's some twists and turns as we see Sarah, you know, either not there or kind of returning as well. And because there's four books in total. And when they've talked about doing additional seasons, I think I've seen, I think it was Ruth Wilson maybe mentioned that they had talked about doing three seasons based on the four books and kind of squishing a couple of the books together to try and, you know, make it make sense, because I think, again, like Down Cemetery Road, the evenness of what the characters do is a little off-center.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I mean, I would definitely watch another season, and I would want a 6 or 7 episode season instead of 8. And I also, you know, this might be the corny answer. I mean, I don't, this is just me making stuff up since I haven't read the other books, but it's like, I like the interplay so much. And what I, you know, as a fan, what I would want really was like for like Sarah to go to work with Zoe. But of course, that doesn't make any sense in Zoe's world, because Zoe would never work with somebody like Sarah. But it's like, I like that interplay so much that I want to see it become this regular team of like them and Wayno as their, you know, tech guy, because he's always good for a cameo. That's why we ultimately like series, is the characters, not the individual stories. And so I want us to see opportunities for them to play off each other with less action movie stuff and more straight up mystery solving. Of course, you know, a little bit challenging now that they've been a part of this huge nationwide, worldwide story, that their roles are definitely going to be outed. It's going to be a little hard for them to go undercover, right?
They leave things off, and Zoe is apparently still wanted for murder of these two Americans. Right?
There's an impressive dragnet in this small Scottish town.
Apparently, they're the only ones worried about it.
Once you cross the border to England, you've gotten away.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, for sure, the first thing I would do would shorten the number of episodes and maybe even the length of the episodes a little bit, just to give it a little more snap, you know,
yeah.
Landed that 47-minute episode. And yeah, I think you're right. You know, what I appreciated most about the show was when you get these two people who kind of get on each other's nerves, right? You know, it's kind of like The Odd Couple. You don't go to watch The Odd Couple to see them both on their own. You go there to see them together causing trouble for the other person, right? So, you know, the more they can do to get those two together, I think the stronger the show will be, especially if they plan on bringing Sarah back as a character. I mean, the possibility, I suppose, would be you just make it the Zoe Boehm show and, you know, she's just there and she brings in whoever, and maybe Sarah shows up, maybe she doesn't. But I do think some of the strength of the show and some of the moments that really spark are when you see the two of them together.
Gotta give Zoe an ensemble. I mean, it's in Slow Horses, you don't, if it was just all Jackson Lamb all the time, it would be too much. I mean, you need it. He's a very pungent spice, and you need him in, you know, measured amounts. And I think the same is true of Zoe. Like, she needs somebody to play off, or her caustic humor and her brusqueness, I think, her spikiness, become too much, really. It's not the odd individuals, it's the odd couple.
Yes. So what do you think? Could you see a Oxford investigation / Slow Horses crossover? I mean, they're both on Apple. You know, there's a little bit of crossover there. Could you see that happening? Could we see Zoe running into Jackson Lamb in a one-off special?
Oh, wow. In a very special episode of...
Yes. Why not? That's the expanded universe.
I think it could be terrible, but I would definitely watch it. If only to watch Zoe go up against Jackson Lamb. It might be too much. It might be like the wrong ends of the magnets or something. It might not work. You might not be able to have both of them in the same room.
I would watch it for sure. I think that would be really interesting. And, you know, and we'll see. I mean, they've kind of teased, danced around it. I don't know. I think it's a long shot. But,
yeah.
Man, that would be pretty fun to see something like that happen. I mean, the crazy thing is, you know, Slow Horses, they've already got the next season filmed, and they're, I believe, right now filming the season after that. So, you know, could they, depending on how production of Down Cemetery Road goes, if it does get picked up, that would be a good way of juicing the ratings, is in my mind, you know. So maybe you do something like that, give them a one-off, you know, hour episode where they do like a special, you know, what are the Brits always do the holiday movies, right? Doctor Who is always releasing a Christmas episode. Can't they do that for Down Cemetery Road Slow Horses?
Oh, man, the Christmas episode is Slow Horses. Yes. And as the Grinch, Jackson Lamb.
Zoe and Jackson Lamb trapped in a pub on Christmas Eve. You know, come on. It writes itself.
We're with Fairy Tale of New York playing on the jukebox. You know, the one thing that's so puzzling is I feel like in this days of streaming, it's hard to know when something's a hit, right? It's hard to know. Back in the days of broadcast television, you know, the Nielsen ratings, and you know, you knew what was a big show. And now it's so opaque. It's such a black box. Like I just, and because I don't really monitor social media, you know, I presume people are out there on Twitter talking about this stuff. You know, I don't follow that. So I have no idea what the chatter is. So I have no idea how this show is being received other than in my home, which is a very small sample size. But yeah, I just don't know what their metrics are for bringing it back.
It is hard. And, you know, I mean, the part of the problem, too, is that these networks all like, you know, as soon as the thing is out, oh, it's a hit. It's been a hit. It's great. But guess what? We're not going to make another season of it. You know, they release later. So, yeah, it is hard to get a sense of what is a success in this kind of case. I'm not sure. You know, Apple seems to be pulling back on some of their shows. They've been trimming the budgets a little bit. This looked like it was not an inexpensive show to make. I think it took 8 months for them to film this. So, wow. They, you know, spent a long time in production on the show. Now, maybe if they do what we suggest and cut back on a couple of episodes and only do 6 episodes, they're cutting a couple of months of production off. You know, maybe that makes it doable. I don't know. I'll be curious to see.
If they set it a little more in and around Oxford and fewer trains, planes, automobiles, and Scottish islands, that'd definitely save them some money.
So we'll see how it shakes out. I do hope we see another season, because I think a lot of times with the first season, it's kicking the tires and, you know, driving around the block a couple of times, figure out what works, what doesn't. The problem is, like nowadays, the stakes are so high and the money is so high that it's hard to get those, you know, those training opportunities. It's like you got to be hitting a grand slam out of the gate. And so it just depends on if the eyeballs are there. And I hope they are, because I want to see more of this.
Yeah, I would absolutely love to see another season just to enjoy these actors some more.
All right, Kier. Well, anything else before we call it quits? We close the book. You know, we've gone down Cemetery Road all the way to the end. There's no more road. We've hit the wall. Until next time. But anything, this is your last chance to kind of put a bow on something here.
I'm just going to quote Talia Ross. Let's get the fuck out of here before someone puts this on TikTok.
Well, I definitely will not be putting this on TikTok. That's for sure. All right, Kier, what is the best way for folks to find what else you are up to?
People can find out all my doings via my monthly newsletter, Graph Paper. It's at kiergraph.com. That's kiergraph.com/graph-paper. graph-paper. And I keep people up to date on absolutely everything from the Filmographers Podcast to my writing appearances to new books that are coming out. So please, if you enjoy my voice in your ears, read my voice on your screen as well and sign up for Graph Paper.
That's great. Well, I'm impressed by your spelling abilities there. I'm more like Malik. I would have stopped halfway through and just said the words, because I cannot spell. If you put a gun with plugs or without to my head, I can't do it. So very impressive.
Hard to spell with a gun in your hand or aimed at your head.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this season of Down Cemetery Road. I am going to be back with one more episode before we kind of put things to bed for a while. I'm hoping to talk about Clown Town, which is Mick Herron's latest Slow Horses book. I'm still zeroing in on a guest for that one. So more to come. Keep your eyes open and watch your feed for that before we kind of close the book on 2025 and return in 2026 to look at more in the world of Mick Herron. I really appreciated hearing from everybody, and I hope you've enjoyed this season. And you can always follow us on whatever your favorite podcast app is with Barbican Station, or go to spywrite.com. That's right with a W. You can find all of the previous episodes and get your listening fix there. Leave me a comment or drop me a line at lacaricast@gmail.com. And until next time, thanks for listening. Like what you're listening to? There's more like it. Exploring the works of John le Carré, each episode of the Le Carré Cast looks at a specific novel or an unexplored aspect of his life and work.
join us as we take a deep dive into the world of espionage John Le Carré has revealed. Search for Le Carré Cast wherever you listen to podcasts or at lecarrecast.com. Spybrary's Spy Rewind uses one episode of a classic spy TV show like Mission Impossible, Alias, or Get Smart to talk about the show as a whole. It's at spybrary.com or search for Spybrary in your podcast app. Like the Wolf is a podcast dedicated to the Nero Wolf mystery series created by Rex Stout. The podcast has reviews of all of his stories, plus interviews with a wide variety of Wolf fans. Find it in your podcatcher under Like the Wolf or at likethewolf.com. That's Wolf with an E. They're all novel podcasts, and you can find them all if you type novel.network in your browser. That's novel.network.